the response has been just like, we are aching to talk about it. We need to talk about it. Yeah, and we need to have this conversation. And so here we are.
Thank you. You know, as I listen to both of you, you know, share. And I thought about the challenges you go through as life givers too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world society got twisted somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It became patriarchal, you know, and you know, so we're going through all of these challenges of finding balance. Even when I hear the mention of capitalism.
Right.
Because ism is added to words to show negativity, mm-hmm. like alcoholism,
right.
race-ism. And it just dawned on me this year when I first heard of you two and the trauma of money, and I thought, capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're going to refer to the negativity that capital brings. Because we talk about cultural capital, for instance, people that speak the language, that know the philosophies, you know, the protocols, they have cultural capital. They're becoming very needed individuals in indigenous community, the language speakers, for instance. Because once they leave, they take it with them.
Right.
So, you know, the whole area of value has changed to think that a check or dollars, you know, to look at that value. Because, and I think about my people picking tons of berries every summer, end of every summer. Tons. You know, they would go as a community and they'd gather that wealth. But my late mother would tell me they would all go and they would all work together and dry these berries in a way that they can be stored for the winter. And that, she said, when they left the camp, they would divide it equally according to the size of the family. So that is connectivity and inclusivity all together, you know, we're all one. And from what I heard was that they would do everything they could to discourage greed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for instance, the first kill for the young hunter was to give away all that meat and the hide and everything with it, you know, so that they would create relationships within the community. Well, you know, like I when I was talking to both of you last time, I don't know why I mentioned the time I made a hand drum. And I was so insecure, you know, I grew up in a residential school, you know, and I got impacted by racism and sexual abuse and stuff like that. And I became very insecure and I beat myself up quite regularly. Oh, and I had no respect for money. It'd go through my fingers like water, or I'd give it away, or I'd spend it foolishly, you know. But so when I came to, and I turned back to the culture, and this man was teaching me how to make a hand drum. And I'd have to do it over. He's very patient with me, and I'd do it over until it was done. And I remember looking at it in awe, and saying, this is so beautiful. And I done it. And he comes up to me and he says, you know, you have to give it away, right? I remember saying, no. It's the first thing I made with my own two hands that I thought was beautiful. But he says, don't give it to a family. Give it to somebody outside of the family. And he says, don't worry, it'll come back. It'll come back.
Right.
And I done what he said, and it has come back. Right now I got 5 hand drums around me. I make hand drums and people gift them to me and I can pass them on, you know. So that whole idea of reciprocity, when you take out, put back in, was where we come from. Then all of a sudden we get wounded. And I think of my community, you know, the welfare system, what they call welfare now. I remember my dad, my late father, telling me the first time the Indian agent came with the first welfare system, which is called relief. That means they're going to give you money and things, you know, because they're locked on the reserve, on the reservation. And my dad said the men of the community chased him away and said, we make our own living with our own two hands. We don't need that handout you're giving to us.
Right.
You know, but now it has become a way of life. We've come, in a sense, permanent wards of the state in the welfare economy. You know, and one of the reasons I was just so looking forward to this, because now we're going to move into how can we inspire and motivate people to live with what they have in a good way. You know, I want you to share the steps that need to be taken, your view of what kind of action can be taken around our relationship with money. You know, and I think of the trauma I've seen. You know, I've been working as a human service worker now since 1976. So I've seen the poverty of single moms, mm-hmm. of elders, of families with, six, seven children, and tried to feed them all and put shoes on their feet, you know, and survive and be traumatized and worried. I don't have enough. Like, and I heard you, Vicky, talk about having the right shoes. You know, my children, they were children of Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan were on the stars, and they'd want a Michael Jordan jacket or a Michael Jackson jacket, you know. And of course, I couldn't afford it.
Right.
You know, so, and they would feel awkward and out of place going into public. Mm-hmm. They're not wearing Nikes or, you know, have the jacket. And they start stealing off each other and beating each other up, you know, to get that capital, even dress code, you know. So I think this is such an important topic. Vicky, you're right. We don't talk about it. You know, how can we live and help each other reach our potential, regardless of how much we have? You know, so that's what I'm interested in, and I guess next steps or course of action. What would you, because you two, I'm so lucky to meet you two, because you go right into it.
Yep.
No, let's talk about money, okay? You know, and very few of us go there. You know, I remember my daughter phoning me, she's stressed out because her best friend, she said, Dad, my best friend, when I have money, she comes to wants me to give it to her, give her some. And I told her, daughter, you know, you let people know that money's already spent for food for you and your children, for shelter. But to teach that literacy, and I heard Chantel talk about literacy, and I was thinking, yeah, this is what we need. Just like there's emotional literacy, how we can teach people to talk about anger, about disappointment, about fear, about anger, about love, you know, affection. I think we need that too. But we also need to have literacy around money, so we're comfortable how to talk about. So I just like to ask, go back to Chantel to maybe share with us, because you've obviously done studies and you've looked at this, you know, which is incredible to me. What do you see as a course of action, let's say for communities or for families or individuals around dealing with money?
Well, I mean, everything that you have said so far, Jerry, in your stories is abundant with action items.
And I listen to you from the place of knowing the deficits that trauma leaves with people, which is this feeling of being disconnected, not feeling safe, not feeling worthy, going into, and then so that we have from trauma and then from capitalism. So ism, like you said, is the negative, or it's the thing that is like mostly prioritized. And in capitalism, the whole goal of capitalism is to seek profit. And capitalism is working exactly what it's meant to do, but its only main focus is profit. And it's very much like a virus, and it mutates. So capitalism is very creative. If it finds hurdles to its creating more product or profit, it will mutate, and it will continue and continue and continue, right? And so that capitalism really encourages individuality. It encourages the opposite of everything that you're talking about, community, connection. We're all going to go gather the berries together as a community, and then we're going to share them together. Capitalism tells us do not do this. Capitalism tells us to be greedy. Capitalism tells us to think about the individual, right? And even was thinking about Instagram. And if you know much about Instagram, if you post a photo of you and your friends, it is going to get less engagement than a photo of you as a selfie. Because the algorithm wants to encourage individuality. Because when we're individually focused, we focused on our own individual deficits, which makes us want to seek out more ways to fix them. For example, buy something, eat something, smoke something, drink something. Like, you know, if we're so focused on the individual, but instead if we shift outside of the individual and shift into community and shift into connection, we're not just thinking about ourselves. We're thinking about the health and the benefit of the collective, the community. And from there, our nervous systems experience their most ideal state. And our nervous system's most ideal state, we call it ventral vagal. And the nickname of this ventral vagal state is called safe and social. So our nervous systems think we're safe when we're social, when we're connected, right? And to me, that is the antidote to a lot of the trauma surrounding money. Is how can I get out of the I or the me and go into the we? And doing that really for ourselves, for the benefits of our nervous system, because when we can regulate our nervous system, then a lot of different things happen. So when our nervous system is regulated, the front part of our brain, which we call the prefrontal cortex, that comes online. And this prefrontal cortex allows us to have executive decisioning, impulse control, creativity, our cognitive capacity is just expanded. This is the place where you want to interact with financial literacy. This is the place where you want to do your visioning for your business. And, you know, you don't want to do it from the place of scarcity and survival, because when we're in that place, we go into, I need to survive, and I'm not surviving unless I have the Nikes. So then I go into this or that thinking, right? It's all this, like we call them cognitive distortions. It's like a distorted view. So how do we have hope? What are our steps? One, we always say, find your window of regulation first. And we're talking about find the regulated nervous system. And we know one of the best ways to find the regulated nervous system is to connect, to get social, to experience the release of neurochemicals like oxytocin, which is like the bonding chemical, you know? And then from that place, when we're a little bit more regulated, we go into a phase called visioning. And this is where we get really aligned with what's our vision for the life that we want to live. And I always encourage people, don't just think about the vision for you in your life, but think about how you can show up and participate in these systems that are inherently traumatizing. So how would you reimagine capitalism? What's your part? How are you going to keep your side of the street clean? And what are you going to do? But from the lens of caring about the collective. And then after the vision phase, we say, this is where we do inventory. So this is where we start getting into some of the finance work, but it also includes not just financial literacy, but emotional literacy too, where we take inventory of, you know, like a moral inventory. So, you know, what's happening with me with money? Like, what's arising? Am I undercharging? Am I overspending? Do I have debt that I'm just completely ignoring? Like, let's use some radical honesty and take a deep inventory. How much money do I owe? How much money do I make? How much money do I need to have in order to survive and thrive? And so then after the inventory stage, we have another very important stage that we call the harmonizing phase. And this is all about forgiveness. And this is where we just took a really radical inventory. This is where we forgive for what we did in the past to survive. And we have to have this phase of forgiveness, and we have to have this phase of harmonizing before we can move to the next phase, which is action. And so the action phase is where we create the budget. The action phase is where we advocate for ourselves and ask for the raise. The action phase is where we say no and we set a boundary to things that are not serving us. You know, whatever your action may be, a lot of the financial literacy falls in this action phase. And then after that, the next phase is called the refinement phase, which just reminds us that life is always about refining. And that refinement phase allows this model to be more circular. You know, like, where do I need to go back and look at my nervous system? Where do I need to go back and forgive? Where do I need to go back and do inventory?
You know, you've reaffirmed that the indigenous philosophy was on the right track, you know, and when I think of we're demystifying money here. You know, who would think that, oh, they're going to talk about money, they talk about healing too, about forgiveness.
Right.
You know, on my relationship with money, until I dealt with my core issues that were making me an unhealthy person, that were put on me. I didn't ask for abuse, to be abused.
Right.
But as long as I didn't, they say in the language, and calls that to look at myself. Until I looked at myself and said, yes, I got a problem, you know, I need to get rid of it. You know, that it's not me. It's, in a sense, there's nothing wrong with me. My actions have been wrong, but there's nothing wrong with me. I was abused, I was harmed, and I get triggered every time something reminds me of my abuser or my abuse. Money has, there's no respect in me for it.
Right.
I give it away, I spend it, and, you know, just total recklessness with it. Until I healed, then I understand sacrifice. Mm-hmm. I go without now, and then a year from now, I can go on a wonderful trip or do something, you know, or buy something for someone else, you know. So to feel centered and grounded in myself was critical, but and to know that I need help. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, in my house, my wife is a minister of finance.
Yes. You
know, which is, I'm totally okay with, you know, and because magically, I don't know if it's magically, like you were saying that, Vicky, the women are the keepers of the fires, the nourishment for the household. Guys do it too, but, you know, this is the core part of it. is the life givers.
Absolutely. Because
that's where we come from as people. We come from our mothers.
Yep.
You know, and they have the gift of seeing what security is, healthy security, to help a baby feel secure as they're growing. You know, if we went back to the old models, like that generosity part, you know, and I look back in my own upbringing, the inclusive upbringing I had with my parents. Yeah, they had some addiction problems, but basically beautiful, wonderful people. You know, and would tell me, oh, you go bring fish to those elders because you have more than enough. And I go give it to them. And the reward would be their twinkling eyes or laughter and sometimes tears. Yeah. Oh, thank you, nephew. Thank you, grandson. Or they call me son, even though we're not blood. You know, and it'd create that bond, that sense of purpose. So we look, and I'm thinking of our conversation, and I say, okay, the steps needed is to, first off, be okay with ourselves. To deal with the issues that will distract us and weaken us, weaken me. You know, I tell the story of my forgiveness journey. That is a core part of my healing, was to forgive my abusers.
Right.
You know, because I had to change the context to the real, what forgiveness is about. It's about letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up thinking it meant turn the other cheek and say, it's okay, you abused me and stuff. It's totally not about that, my understanding. Right. Just let them go. I refuse to carry you anymore, abuser. You know, Sir Johnny McDonald, I refuse to carry you. I'm putting you down. You
know? Yes.
And then I attained freedom.
Yes.
You know, so that's indigenous methodology. Some people call it the medicine wheel. I call it the healing wheel. We get to look at ourselves, look at, because our gift as indigenous people is vision.
Yes.
We can see what happens if we overfish, we overhunt,
right.
Or we're not generous, you know, because when you give, you receive.
Mm-hmm.
That's the law.
Yep.
What goes around comes around.
That is law.
That is a law. That's not, that's nature law, not man's law. That's nature law. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And look at where the world is right now.
Oh, that pyramid system of getting to the top no matter how.
Right.
There is causing extinction, causing climate change, you know, mental health issues, disorders. I feel this will be so beneficial for many of our people if we teach the children about money, about respect, that it literally comes from a tree, the money.
Yes, yes.
And now, you know, that the animal's life, the fish's life, or the corn, because as human beings, we live on the multitude of spirits.
Right.
You know, whereas a herbivore just goes around eating certain grasses and things. But us, we live in many, many lives have given themselves up so we can survive, so we can live the way we want to.
Absolutely.
So we can teach. And that's one thing I'm going to ask you in closing here.
Mm-hmm.
I always close the podcast and I have guests to give you a chance to give a message to a specific group or just something that you want to put out there around money. You know, so that you can have a chance to give a message. And I will too, you know, and maybe I'll start off. I just wanted to give a message to my granddaughters, you know, to always have this gratitude for food, for people that prepare food for you, for people that put time into your life, because that's valuable. And to respect money when it comes to you. To treat it like it was a salmon or a grouse. and to be generous with it. So that's the message I'd like to give my granddaughters to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So Chantel, what would your message be? To who it would be?
My message would be to anybody who feels open to receive this. And that message is that the path to healing lies within the Indigenous worldviews. And everything that you were sharing, Jerry and Vicky, all the answers to healing are there. And that's the message. That's the message right there. You know, what, how can we question the views that we're constantly bombarded with from dominant culture and introduce and empower other worldviews that are focused on healing and not profit only?
Thank you, Chantel. Vicky.
I mean, what both of you said, but also one is that you spoke of vision, Jerry, and I believe that our dreams, our desires, our visions given to us by that which created us. So to not discount what we want and what we feel that we can give the world and to pursue it. And that we have, not only are those visions given to us by that which created us, everything we need to help co-create that with the ultimate creator is within us as well, if only we commit, get clear, dedicate, and keep showing up to that vision and really believing it as well. And, you know, I have to have hope that this is possible. I can't sit here and do this work and not believe that this is a possibility. I believe it and I know it. Maybe not in my lifetime, maybe not in our lifetime, but we have to leave the future generations, the seven generations, with a greater legacy than what we came in with, you know? And I'm happy to talk about money. Money is a tool.
Yes. So, oh, those are, that's brilliant. You know, it's a tool.
Yes.
It's no different than the digging stick or the harpoon or
right.
The net.
Yes.
It's a tool, and we must, when you respect the tool, it performs
yes.
for you.
Absolutely. That's so good, right?
Yeah. This is such a wonderful way to end a podcast. But I just so appreciate both of you for taking this time in your lives to come and share about money, you know, and under the influence.
Mm-hmm.
When you're under the influence of positivity,
mm-hmm.
positivity radiates.
Yes.
When you're under the influence of negativity, the negativity radiates. So the title of this podcast is called Under the Influence, the Trauma of Money. Mm-hmm.